Welcome back to NALP's Young Professional Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts today include myself, Brett Lemke with RM Landscape, Macy Robinson with Landcare, and Neil Glatt with Grow the Bench. Hello, everyone.
Good morning. Hey,
Miles gave me a little bit of a hard time, I think, with the last intro to be more, a little more cheerful and articulate, or just what do you have more flex in the vocal. So I tried. I don't know if I did it, but.
We still need the accents. Bring Miles to come back so we can do the different accents each time. Still haven't done that.
Yep. No, that would be a quick way for some bad comments.
Next episode.
Yeah. Well, Macy, we have a guest. Why don't you introduce our guest, please?
Absolutely. I would love to. We have Jennifer Burnett with us today. She is the EVP of Organizational Development at Landcare. She has worked at Landcare for 7 years and has been in the industry for over 24. In that time, she has served in several roles ranging from administrator to director of finance to her current role, where she provides leadership to develop and employ strategies to implement and improve structures and processes for learning and talent development, onboarding and advancement programs. So we are so excited. I'm very excited to have Jennifer on today. I get to work with Jennifer on a daily basis. So Jennifer, is there anything that I missed?
I don't think so. I think that was a great intro. Thanks, Macy. Love working with you as well. On the personal side, it might be a word, might be a thread that comes in later, that I am also a mother of two and have been a working mother my entire career. And I've been married for 28 years, happily, to the same person, my high school sweetheart.
That's quite the feat, too.
The key word is happily, and I keep forgetting, like, when I say that, I've been married. Oh, happily. That is, like, if I start throwing that word in more often, then it'd be like, okay, that clarifies a lot more. So, and today, we could just do, how Macy and Jennifer, you talk on a 1v1 basis of this, that we could just listen in on that whole process. So that could be just as exciting here. Neil, you and I could just really just sit back and relax and see how it all develops. But so there's lots of options today of what we're going to go through and discuss.
Now, yeah. I'm excited just from the women experience side with Jennifer to get that side, and then just being in the industry for this long. The different phases that she's seen. I think it's exciting.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I joked when I was asked to do this podcast, I'm not young, but maybe things to offer.
The hosts, even the hosts were getting a little bit of maybe aging out here, at least some of us, but guests, you know, you could be all ages and you're totally cool. We like the Young Professional Network.
Thanks. I remember when I was young, I was actually reflecting upon that coming into this call this morning and thinking about how I started my career and feeling like I was the young person the first 10 years. And now, you know, kind of being on the other side of it, I still feel like I really have an appreciation for the younger generation coming into the industry and really trying to find a way to how do we attract that talent into the business and how do we make this something that they're excited to do and get in front of the students at, you know, NCLC. And I got to attend that the first time last year being in this role and not in a finance role. So I really enjoyed having more exposure and working with those young professionals. So excited to be here today and yeah, see where the conversation goes.
I'm curious, just that thought there, what point do we all forget, like become disconnected, right? Like there's always some age or what does it stop us to, how do we stay connected? And that 10-year part, that's an interesting like level of like, okay, I'm not the college student anymore. I can remember only the fun stuff of those days, not the responsible stuff. But, what do we do? What do you do to stay connected, especially as we begin to, that age does separate those?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, engaging with everyone as they come into the business and just being really curious to learn like what their experience has been and what they hope their experience will be and how, what their expectations are and staying connected to that. I remember when Macy started working at Landcare.
It feels like so long ago now.
Yeah. I'm right. Neil's turning 60 in a couple of weeks. And so, you know, you're just, you know, that connection piece, but it is, I mean, I think it's that point of listening and being curious at new age is irrelevant at that point, because you always have that connection. It's very easy when you are just out of school and you can say, well, I had this and I experienced this, but how do we stay connected to that future piece, workforce or leadership?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious what you've observed has stayed consistent and what you've observed has really changed a lot. Maybe it's in 5-year lifts, maybe it's a little longer than that, but certainly we've seen so much change technologically in the human experience in the past, you know, 20, 30 years, really, really dramatically. Like what's that meant for people entering the business and kind of your day-to-day of attracting and engaging talent?
That's a great question. You know, I think earlier in my career, the economy was at a stage where, you know, we talk about this often, that people were lined up at the door and people were looking for work, and we weren't having to necessarily attract them. We were getting to choose the best of who was available and interested. And so the onus was kind of on the candidate to present themselves as being the best person for the role. And there was, I think, you know, a hunger to prove yourself when you started, because there was a lot more competition for those roles. And I feel like that slowly started to transition, where I feel like we're on, you know, the flip side of that now, where we're really having to present ourselves as the employer of choice and do a much better job of selling the roles that are available to be attractive to the candidates, and then doing a really great job when we get them here to develop and train them and keep them engaged. And, you know, I think that has worked in our favor, honestly, because as Mike took the helm as CEO, we've worked really hard to become an employee-centric organization and focus on those exact things, not knowing, you know, 8 years ago, that how quickly this transition would happen. And even, you know, you pointed the changes in technology. Interestingly, you know, I think if I had thought about this 20 years ago, like what would the changes in technology present themselves in terms of the expectations of new employees starting, it would be that you come in and you're tech savvy and you're interested in learning all of that. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think, you know, especially in this industry, those that are in the green industry programs at colleges, they want to be outside. They want to work with people, or they want to work with plants, and they want to work with horticulture. They're not getting excited about technology, but technology is certainly required in your day-to-day. And so creating processes and documentation and training programs that make it easy to learn whatever tech you have at your company become that much more important, because if they're frustrated with the technology, it makes, you know, that part of the job not fun, and you can't get away from it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't think it's exciting, but it is required, right? And this new generation is the first generation of what we're calling digital natives, right? Mm-hmm. But so little of the technology in the green industry I observe as being mobile first, which is how they're interacting with it. So it's interesting you point that out, because I think you're right. There's an expectation and a comfortability, but also a big disconnect with the current state of technology.
Yeah. You know, we use Aspire, and we recently brought on Skylar Westergaard to lead our MT program. And he was previously professor at BYU Idaho. And one of the things that he had done in his classes was bring Aspire into the classroom. And I am such a fan of that idea and really would like to work to expand getting that program, getting Aspire into the HORT programs, so that they have that exposure. And then it's less scary when they come you know, into the workday environment and they see something they've seen before. You know, I majored in accounting. If I hadn't been exposed to a spreadsheet before I started my first role, I probably would have been really overwhelmed. And so I would love to see more of that exposure to programs, technology programs in the classroom.
Well, Macy, you're out there. I think you do a lot of fair bit of recruiting. Jennifer, you probably join that piece too. What are you finding that programs are adapting to that? I mean, it was like the Dynascape days, but you know, I think Dynascape was probably a good marketing move just as much as it was a preparation to get that out there and be able to come in certainly the CAD technology too. But are you finding that the embracing of technologies at the program level is growing, or is that still a gap?
I think there's still a big gap in there. I think it's also just there's, you know, not very many people going into the programs anymore. I feel like there's been a big decline in that. And also the professors, they're having a hard time hiring, you know, those young professors that want to come in, the people that have been in the industry and learn this. Like I know one that was at A&M for quite a few years and she got out because they weren't wanting to be progressive and, you know, bring in these things. And, you know, she's back in the business industry in Austin. So I do think that there's a lack on that side in getting technology into the colleges and teaching it. And I think you have plenty of companies that would sponsor, you know, hey, we'll buy the programs for this, you know, we'll buy Aspire, we'll buy Revit, whatever, you know, program that's really popular right then to teach these students versus just using straight AutoCAD or, you know, QuickBooks. Using something that's more targeted towards landscaping and getting these students used to it.
Yeah, Macy, you point out a really good thing about the, you know, the drop in enrollment in the HORT programs. And it's why we have recently started to focus on how do we attract talent from other programs? Because that's not the only talent pool that could be successful in this industry. And, you know, like the idea of AutoCAD, we don't need AutoCAD in this land care environment. You know, in professional landscape management, we're not doing designs. And that, so that's a technology that they're learning that wouldn't even apply here necessarily. And so when we look at the skill sets that are needed to be a successful leader at land care, we're looking at management program, you know, business management, communications, hospitality. And so there's this whole other, I think, untapped talent pool out there in, you know, that there can be college recruiting from, and we're trying to strategize about how we best attract that talent and make it known that the landscape industry is somewhere they could be really successful and have a career.
Well, I like that. And it is, you know, there's a bit of an uphill of just, again, introducing our industry to those other programs and saying that how the reputation and the professionalism and the accessibility to growth is there and probably even stronger in some of their other pieces. And so certainly in different times and economies, some of their standard industries are going to be much tougher than ours to grow in. So, but so how has that been going for land care and you? Has it been an uphill battle or has it been a pretty open, welcoming space?
Yeah, no, I don't think we have officially jumped in and that we're at the beginning of that journey. And I'm excited to go down that road. We have had success, you know, in one-off cases, but we haven't really executed that full strategy of getting into the career fairs for those majors. And I think that's something we're at the beginning of and excited to do. But when I do get the opportunity to have conversations, you know, on one-on-one with those potential candidates, I love sharing that, you know, by no choice of our own, we've proven to ourselves that this industry is recession-proof and pandemic-proof. And I would like to not have to reprove those theories ever again, but there are not a lot of industries that can say that. And I think that, you know, given the current economy, that hearing that we have proven we can be recession-proof may be attractive to those that are aware of, you know, the potential future that could happen. And those that can appreciate having stability and having that long-term growth track, you know, clearly in front of them. The grass always grows And, you know, that's something that we can't deny.
Yeah, I would think there's a real niche path to success there, right? Which is, for instance, you mentioned hospitality management. I think it's an awesome pool to recruit from, but you're going to find a lot of people who went to school for that. So they want to try it, right? And so you almost want to catch them like 2 years after they graduate, yeah. where they're sick of working in hospitality, but have those skills and learning experience. And certainly it's a longer term commitment to building those relationships and keeping in touch with those people. And, you know, even just a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking to a business fraternity at Michigan State, right? And just talking about, hey, maybe consider a slightly smaller company that you don't know or an industry that you're not familiar with because they exist. But I think the trades is going to get a boost with the next generation. I think Gen Z is going to look at the student debt crisis and millennials in general and really, you know, double down on trades. But the question is, which trade is going to be successful, right? And I think the green industry is a long way to go to compared to more traditional, well-known, unionized trades that exist with more formalized apprenticeship programs. So curious how you're going to emerge as the leader in the messaging and compete with kind of that niche space where you're a trade, but you're trying to play in the managerial sandbox.
Yeah, no, that those were all really great points. You know, on the first one you made about the hospitality management, I completely agree with you. We've talked about the appeal after someone has, you know, worked in hotels or restaurants to say, do you enjoy those hours? Do you enjoy working nights and weekends? Because that's, you won't do that here. And I actually started, you know, I worked my way through college waiting tables. And I remember how excited I was. And it's really funny to think about it now. All I wanted was, can I just work from 8 to 5 every day, please? you know, I was married through college and I would, you know, we would pass each other in the night. I would come home at midnight and my husband would be asleep and he'd get up in the morning and go to work all day. And I just remember that being so appealing to just be able to, can I just work 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, please? And so I do agree. I think that that's the culture of Landcare is all about relationship building and that we're in it for the long haul. So establishing those relationships, even if it's at, you know, a college recruiting event for hospitality management and creating that awareness and staying with them, you know, and we like to say, if we don't get them right out of college, we just didn't hire them yet. And so, you know, that's not a lost cause if they don't come right to Landcare. That's just an opportunity to continue to stay connected and, you know, bring them here when they're ready. And I love the idea of them going and getting the experience and realizing, having the appreciation for the differences. So I think there's an opportunity there. You know, in terms of competing with the trades, I agree with you. I think that there is that Gen Z is going to make that transition. You know, I hear more and more often from parents of, you know, kids that are entering college. I have a high school senior now, and I have a son who just graduated from college and started his grad program this year, that, you know, college isn't for everyone and that you can make a really good living in the trades. And there's an opportunity to, you know, get a paycheck at 18 years old. And one of my close friends is an electrician, and his son was born 2 months after my son, and his son started in as an electrician in the trade when my son was going in as a freshman in college. And, you know, he's been supporting himself and went through an apprenticeship program and, you know, became a journeyman by the time my son was a sophomore. And so it's very interesting to watch their different paths and say, like, they're that's a great career that he's going to have as an electrician. And I think that there's becoming more awareness of that now. So it does put the onus on our industry to compete with those trades. And we don't have the formalized, you know, apprenticeship programs. If there's, you know, a positive view from some point of unionization, you know, we don't have that either. And so I think that we're going to have to do the hard work to say, here's what you can get in our industry that you're not going to get from trades and from the other trades. And I, you know, I don't think we have the answer to that yet, but I think having awareness of it and knowing that there's some work to do to strategize about how to compete with that is important.
Well, and I, with your role and function, and then, you know, what Macy shared with just her development within Landcare, it stands out as to say, as an industry, we're going to help you grow. So how many, you know, companies in our industry are unfortunately saying, just come work and just work, right? Produce and we'll pay you. And that's the relationship. But to say, we're going to help you grow. And, you know, Neil, you went back for MBA. I always dabbled with the idea, but then I always found that my education was being part of the industry and networking and peer groups or the associations or just, you know, being curious enough. And that helped, that fulfilled me enough to grow in my role. But at Landcare, it seems that you all take that pretty seriously. And there's an education track and a development piece that you will take and help people grow so that they could see that path, not unlike what the path to become a journeyman, to be path to grow and some of these other trades, it's very well established apprenticeship programs. And it's just, you can see it. I think it's still a gap in our industry that just can't see how I'm going to do something here. Yeah, and I struggle with that, even my organization still.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, that's where we need to do the work to create that awareness and paint that picture. And, I think we have a lot of ideas and we haven't implemented all of them yet. I'm very proud that we were able to launch our management trainee program this year. And you know, we already have two classes going. We'll have our first graduates of that class in March of next year. And we plan to start class number 3 in January. And that we're presenting that as landscape grad school, you know, an accelerated track to prepare you for management, and using that and marketing that at the, you know, college recruiting level to help attract candidates to come in. I think that will be effective in other programs as well. And I'm excited to try and get in front of those students. But in terms of creating the picture of, we have a development path for you, that's something we've talked a lot about. And, you know, even you talked about painting the picture, even just working with our marketing team to actually create a visual that shows here's where the opportunities lie and how far you can go, I think will be impactful. So I love that I'm 20, you know, almost 25 years into my career, and I can look back and see where I've come from and all of the success in the companies that I've worked with and the roles that I've been in. And I still feel like there's so much more work to do. And that's what I love about what I do, is that there is still so many things that we can do to grow and improve in the business and provide more opportunities for people. And I'm just excited to continue to work on those. So I love the idea of incremental improvement, and we can always be, you know, 1% better every day. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, 1% is a good start. I like that.
Jennifer, I'd love to know, we talked about how you started in the industry, like the finance side. You've obviously taken a very big switch. And I think a lot of people see that, whether they're in construction management, like project management, and then, you know, they've been asked by their company to switch to project or, production management, you know, more the maintenance side. How did you find kind of the courage whenever you were asked to step into more of this, you know, employee development style side versus looking at spreadsheets all day? Those are two very different style roles. How'd you kind of guide your way through that?
Yeah. So that was a transition. I, early in my career, was asked, you know, what was I interested in? And I remember having a conversation about, you know, would you ever be interested in going to the HR side of the business? I said, absolutely not. There couldn't be anything less appealing to me at that time. And I think that's because the idea of HR, the way that I saw it at that point in my career, was very much about rules and compliance and laws and legalities and, you know, things like that. And what I love about our structure for employee services at Landcare is that we've separated those functions to say, yes, we have a need for all of those things. And there's there's a set of people that work on that part of it. And then there's this whole employee development side of it, which is different and separate and not about what we, you know, relate to HR. And we had a VP of HR early, you know, when Mike was here, and then we didn't have that role anymore. And so we went for a long time, and I watched executives, I watched Mike and that group try and figure out what the right role was there to lead employee development. And throughout all of, you know, my tenure on the finance side of the business, I was always working with people, and I found the most fulfillment out of helping my team members grow. And I've been very fortunate to work with some great talent and, you know, provide leadership and mentorship to them and watch them be really successful in their careers. And when I came here and, you know, Mike kind of laid out the things that he was hoping I could accomplish on the finance side of the business, the first thing was to build a team. And I love that part. I've always loved that part. So as I was watching this, you know, trying to figure out the puzzle of how do we lead employee development, at one point, I literally raised my hand. I said, I see what we're trying to do and the difficulty of trying to find the right person to do it. I know I don't have a traditional background, but I have a vision. I feel like I'm aligned with your vision, and I love developing people. So I'd love to try. And so it was, you know, at that point where I was challenged to go get some personal development and say, well, you know, you have some gaps in your understanding of what it's going to take to do this. So create your own personal development plan. And that's what I did. So I went out and I spent a year, you know, going to workshops and going to conferences and getting really reading a ton of books and getting really invested in that, you know, organizational development function. And I also had to do a little bit of, you know, salesmanship on my side to say, no, I'm ready for this challenge. And I'd really like the opportunity to try. And so I was very fortunate to get just the full support of the entire executive team to say, we would love to support you in this journey, and we'll do everything we can to help you be successful. And, you know, that's how I ended up here. And it's been a journey. It's definitely been learning by doing and really listening to those in the organization that have a lot of experience in these areas and working together as a team to develop programs and strategies that are going to be helpful and achieve what we were trying to do. But it's definitely something that took a lot of courage on my part and also a lot of support from the leaders around me, which I am very fortunate to have.
So there's so many elements of true organizational development in what you described, right, in that journey. I think what I'm most curious is, how do you balance kind of a top-down programmatic approach like you're developing with keeping the manager involved, which is what led you in this path in the first place, and success, right? And how do you balance that?
Yeah, so we know and have proven to ourselves over and over again that if we come up with the ideas at the top level, you know, in what is perceived as the ivory tower, and say, here's what you need to do, and here are the things that will help your business get better, that there is little uptake and little buy-in. And so we have been very intentional to not be prescriptive or to just create programs for the sake of creating programs, and to really try and diagnose where the greatest opportunities are and where we're going to get the biggest lift by interacting with the business and saying, where are your deepest challenges and what can we do to help you? And then trying to understand and strategize at that branch level. If you had this, would this be helpful to you? The other thing that we've really learned and try really hard to do is to pilot everything we do on a small level first and understand if what we've designed is going, has the potential to be successful on a broader level. That helps a great deal in uptake in a broader level. And when you're able to say, we piloted this with, you know, 5 branches or 10 branches, and here is the success they achieved by investing in their time in this program, then there's a pull, and rather than trying to push, you know, something down to all of the branch level. And so following that process has been very successful for us. And I think that we'll continue to do that, which is, you know, not doing something to check the box and being really attentive and listening to what the challenges of the business are. And also trying to balance the, you know, the whirlwind of what everyone has to do every day with the expectation of this continuous learning, and not create things that take so much time out of everyone's day that they just can't get it all done.
Macy, what you are on the receiving end of a lot of what Jennifer has. So this is the perfect opportunity. Like, can you agree?
How do you really
with
feel?
Yeah. Like, yeah, sure, Jennifer. That's what you want us to think. But no, I how do you connect that those pieces? And what value has that brought to you as a leader?
And a manager? I think it's definitely a balance. Like, coming from the account management side, it's like another thing to do. But then coming from the branch management side, like, growing through it. And it's almost like that saying, it's like, well, what if we train them and they leave? It's like, well, what if we don't train them and they stay? Like, so I think it's a balance as a branch manager, you know, kind of putting that stuff into effect, because you want your team to be learning and you want them to develop and you want, you know, your business to grow. It's about your individual business. And so sometimes I think it's teetering, you know, what they might push down and how does it work with your team? You know your team, you know your guys. Like, I know how this team works versus how my Dallas team works, and how you'd implement that. It's very different to those team members. It's not just, here's the video, you're all watching it, and this is it type of thing. It's, you know, hey, we're going to talk about this in the branch meeting today, versus one person is, yeah, hey, can you watch this really quick? And they're like, suck it all in, and they're good.
We find ourselves in our organization constantly changing how we share information or do things differently. And you'll have, I think some people will sort of, the critics will say, can't we just stick to this one way, or why we always got to change the format of something? It's like, well, and I'm always curious to say, what is going to really connect and not get stale, and in the ways that deliveries, and obviously in many organizations, there's just so each individual is going to hear and see things in a different way. And so how do you connect with those folks? And so it is, it's very true. You have to adapt. And then once you find what clicks, just, you know, hang on to that and push that to help that see that and measure that growth.
Yeah. I think what's also worth considering is at different roles, different delivery works better. As an example, we were trying to develop a program to improve employee engagement at the crew level. And the goal was to help supervisors understand that they're leaders of people. They're not just the technicians to make the properties look great. And so we had this vision of providing this employee engagement training at that supervisory level. Determining what topics, you know, we wanted to cover wasn't the hard part. Writing the content wasn't the hard part. The hard part was the formula about how do we deliver it in a way that doesn't disrupt their entire day. You don't have to pull them out of the business, you know, for this chunk of time of learning, that they'll, and in a way where they'll be engaged in the training as much as possible. And so what we arrived at is, well, one thing they're used to doing and they've done their entire career is a safety tailgate talk, right? So once a week, they gather around the tailgate to have a discussion for 15 minutes about a safety topic. That's been standard everywhere I've worked my entire career. So we developed the program to be delivered in a very similar way. And so that it felt like an environment that they're familiar with and an uptake of information in a way that they're used to doing it, just a different set of content. And in small chunks, So going, you know, deep on a very specific concept. And we're still in the beginning stages of figuring out how to perfect the delivery of that, because we have weather that gets in the way and you know, lots of different challenges that happen where you don't have everyone in the same location all at the same time. So we're still working through some of those aspects, but the feedback in terms of how it's intended to be delivered has been really positive. And, you know, there's not this requirement to get all the supervisors, you know, in a training room to do that.
Well, it's and it's an individual. So they're right. You have a lot of supervisors that have got to believe in this. And then though, when they, you know, that train the trainer concepts that have to continuously come in and when it's a diverse workforce and a lot of people in that workforce, how do you get that to be delivered in that same messaging, right? So what was discussed and considered at certain levels changes and translates differently through the many levels. And that we find that to be a really difficult part. And we put people that are great technicians and we put them up front and then they just aren't comfortable with being in front of people, but one-on-ones, they're fine, or in the field, they're fine. But it's a constantly evolving space with people part.
Yeah.
Not the spreadsheets. Spreadsheets are easy. Just put the equal sum and the thing works always the same way you tell
always
it.
Always the same way. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but not people for some reason.
Hey, Jennifer, shifting. I know I like to cover this as becoming a new mother here soon. You lead our women's initiative network at Landcare for us and have been in the industry. You talked a little bit about, you know, going through college, you know, working through college and everything. How did you make that transition and make the choices, especially on the finance side? Like, budget season is absolutely crazy. How'd you find that balance? And I think this still applies to men because, you know, they think they're expected to do so much, even when they have a new kid born. It's like, oh, well, the mother will do this. It's like, no, it's just as much, you know, the male's right to be at home with the kid if they want to, or, you know, being at that soccer practice. Where did you find the balance over the years and kind of how are you trying to implement that through the women's initiative for Landcare?
Yeah, I think working mother and balance in the same sentence, like, is just, I laugh because it's like any different day is like, you know, was there balance today? No, I just got all the things done is kind of how you feel when you're in the moment. And I don't think I ever felt like I got all the things done. And so there was always this compromise of, did I get the most important things done today? Yeah, I was 25 when I had my son and working full time. And I was very, very fortunate that my husband, you know, was equally engaged and, you know, a really, really involved father. And then I had my daughter when I was 30. And by that time in my career, I was a divisional controller. And I actually came back from having my daughter and stepped into the next role as a director of accounting administration. And my husband stayed home with my daughter for 10 months. And he, to this day, he thought he should have stayed home longer. So, you know, it feels like yesterday that I was going through that stage of my life. I look at my kids now at 17 and 22 and feel like, wow, it should feel so much easier now to, you know, I'm not having to give baths and get kids to daycare and go to Parent Teacher Association and figure out how to run over on my lunch break to do, you know, lunch duty so I can get my service hours in for school and get them to gymnastics and rugby practice and all of those things. And at the same time, I miss it dearly. I would love to be in that part of my life and feel like a crazy person who, you know, gets 6 hours of sleep a night. So I feel like it was the hardest time, but it was also some of the best, you know, times of my life, years of my life during that stage with my kids. And I am in support of any, you know, woman who wants to be a working mother and always a shoulder to you know, lean on when they're going through really tough times. And I think that's part of what we try to provide at WIN is the mentorship, but also just the support system to say what you're doing is really hard, but what you're doing can be so fulfilling. And you can do both. You can be a professional and you can be a working active mother and do all the things that you want to do. And that there's a community out there who has done it and is willing to help you in your journey. So I'm really proud to have, you know, achieved what I've achieved and to have two great kids through all of that. And I'm excited for you, Macy, to start that journey as a mother and as a working mother, a professional. And, you know, I would say you just have to take it day by day. It's like any tough time in your life when you're, you know, you're going to college and you have a full load and you're thinking like, how can I get all of these things done? You stay in the moment and you focus on this is what I have to do right now to be successful today. And I think that's how we get through any, you know, really, really challenging times in our lives.
Wise words of Jennifer Burnett, people.
Are you doing anything on workplace flexibility to support people with childcare responsibilities? I mean, predominantly that's still women, but also many men. And, you know, childcare is super easy to find after school, but almost impossible in the morning, right? So
yeah.
The 8 to 5, or what a lot of crews are doing, the 7 to 3, you know, just it really stops a lot of people from our industry, I think. And just flexibility in general. I think I saw, I can't remember if it was last month or last quarter, 50% of applications on LinkedIn were to jobs that supported remote working, but only 15% of job postings were for remote. So when you talk about, you know, this getting attention and getting candidates, it's clear that flexibility is desired in a post-pandemic world, but it seems like employers have been slow to adopt. And I'm just curious, is that on your radar? Is that something you're developing for both the diversity and also just the overall well-being initiatives?
Yeah, great question. We have had a lot of discussions about that. You know, we were extremely flexible through the pandemic. And as we've come out of the pandemic, really focused on getting everyone back in person and in the office and maintaining that culture. And the importance of being face-to-face and the ancillary conversations that happen naturally through the course of business when you're in person that don't happen when you're working from home, we think really are what enrich our environment and really create that culture of connectivity and, you know, are so additive to just feeling like a team. And we've heard from so many teams as they've, you know, come back together throughout the last year that they missed that and that they really, really feel how much healthier they are as a business when they're there together. And so we are not supporting a remote workforce. We really are looking for those that want to come to the office and be in person every day, all day. In terms of being flexible for working mothers or parents, you know, that have childcare challenges, we haven't made the transition at the crew level necessarily to change, you know, the start times to work through that. I think there's definitely some ideas that have floated around. I think there's even a crew on one of our branches that the entire crew are almost all working mothers. And so I think there's some things there that should be, you know, up for consideration about how we might be able to support those hours a little bit better. We definitely have working mothers in our business that are, you know, we accommodate their start time so that they're able to drop off to daycare in the morning in roles where, you know, the start times might be different otherwise. And so we like to be considerate of that and take that into account. But I haven't, For current team members that have, you know, are in Macy's situation where they're come back to work after having a child, I don't think we've had many leave as a result of not being able to be flexible to work with their schedules. And I think that speaks to the managers in their branches being accommodating to make sure that we can help them, you know, through that transition and, you know, keep them engaged team members.
I think a lot of it too, not just at Landcare, but depending on where you're at, you know, finding those detail style crews, women are known to be more detailed, or even if it is a single father, you know, that's, they're more of a porter style service, finding those routes that work for them. It's like, hey, you know, or if you're in residential, then it's really easy. You know, residents don't want you at their house normally before a certain hour. And so like, hey, you're going to be on the detail crew that runs the route from 8 to 5. So they can drop off their kid at 7:15, 7:30. So it really does depend on that manager, if it's, you know, a single company that everyone reports to one office, or if it's like Landcare where, you know, there's over 60 offices and, you know, I make those decisions for my team. But just finding empathetic people that are managing those teams and trying to work and want to work with their team members through these things, because the landscaping industry is an in-person industry. So I think it depends a lot on the person that's leading that group.
Yeah, we've talked about the ideas that, you know, there are those that just can't work during the week and the weekends are their best available. But then we think Sundays are traditionally a non-working day in our industry, and we try not to work Saturdays in certain parts of the season. But what if we can keep the utilization of the equipment and it's a more flexible schedule for those? We haven't found those folks yet, and we probably haven't really marketed hard well enough for that, but it is a way to, obviously it has a benefit to the business. You could, less capital needed for additional equipment and people, but you are getting more productivity out of a work week. And we've talked in these conversations many times, it's the empathy piece and the balance of creating empathy within your organization that has a benefit to the person, the people, the team member, and to the organization itself. And when that combination works, it feels really good to do it. It's when it's unbalanced, right? That, and then it just becomes that grind or that conversation. And you want to do it, and you enjoy it because it's impacting both of you in a positive way. Right. And there's a way to that path almost every time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I can think of a team member that I hired as a branch administrator at a previous organization. And she works here today as an account manager. And so I've worked with her entire career, and she had just graduated college when I hired her, and she is now a mother of 4 and is a very successful account manager in our business. And her team couldn't imagine not having her as part of their team. And so they understand the challenges, you know, and the demands that she has upon her hours, having, and when I say 4 children, I think there are 4 children under the age of 7. So 4 very young children.
Mm-hmm.
And, she has found a way to be very successful and to have, you know, she works with a very empathetic manager who accommodates her schedule and allows her to work. You know, sometimes she's finishing proposals late at night. And sometimes, you know, she has to run to school in the middle of the day, and that works in that environment.
Yeah, if you measured my organization from my father's perspective, it would have been, I expect you here at 6 a.m. and I think you should be leaving at 6 p.m. And otherwise, and he lives on our property, and I'm looking out the driveway, and he'll watch who drives down, up and down the road. And I'll get the phone call. Why are they leaving at 3:30? Well, they have kids. They have a life. And then, so then we evolve that to, like, nowadays it's like, yes, we have technology that can work at home in the evenings and things could get done. And it's just not the physical location and being present and punching the time card is that path anymore. So, you know, so, and of course in our industry, we have to still deal with that thought and mindset, and then you have the more progressive. So we'll win. We'll totally win over the old way of thinking. I'm optimistic with that. Well, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate the insight today. We're coming to the end, and we end everything with the rose and thorn. So Macy, why don't you share your rose and thorn here?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any thorns right now, just growing happy, healthy baby. And Rose is, I'm headed off to Disney with my family next week. So super excited to get away with them and, you know, take a break and just hang out with them for a week. So, and my husband's never been to Disney, so I'm super excited for him to go.
Oh, yeah. That'll be like bringing a kid around then. He'll be running all over the place for this thing. Yeah. Sweet. Exciting.
Yeah.
Jennifer, how about you? Rose and thorn.
I don't know that I'm prepared for Rose and Thorn.
We like doing that to guests too. We really like. Clearly, this is always a test. I use it too. Like, well, if she listened to every single one of our podcasts weekly, then she would know exactly what to say. So that I'm learning something here.
I would say my Rose and Thorn is the same thing. My daughter she's in the middle of her college applications, and she finished. The majority of them have been submitted. Today was the due date for the most like recent set. So she's applying to 15 schools and she's finished 11 applications. And so that's the roses that she's finished. The thorn is the realization that she's going to go away to college and she's my baby. And I have this, like, when I think about it, I'm so proud and so sad all at the same time, but ultimately I'm excited for her to spread her wings. So that's my rose and thorn.
Neil, how about you?
Well, Brett, you and I were chatting about a week and a half ago via email. I didn't have the heart to tell you then that while you were plowing snow, I was on the beach in Rio for my final residential MBA week. So that's my rose and thorn. It was a phenomenal experience. It was my fourth week with my cohort for my MBA. And I don't know when I'll get to see them in person again. So kind of this really, really cool trip to Brazil and concluding, you know, an 18-month learning journey with some really good friends that's coming to an end. So, yeah.
Yes, I appreciate you not sharing that photo at all. We did get off an epic Buffalo snow event, which I think made a lot of the news. And I think in some areas we were in the 4 to 6 feet range. And some of our teams, we weren't in the hardest hit areas, but we sent a lot of operations to support over there. And kudos to our team that lives and works in Buffalo daily. And then just really everybody that's from Buffalo, they just got a grit to them that handles that. I mean, even in Rochester, we're an hour and a half away. We didn't get barely any of that snow and sort of good, right? No one likes to start the season with 4 to 5 feet of snow, but it's happened every 4 to 5 years. So it's becoming predictable in that sense. So that was a bit of a rose and a thorn, right? The people are now rested right before Thanksgiving. They will go into a long weekend. So that was helpful. Fun experience, and we've learned a great deal. And then Jennifer, I share that same stress about my children. My daughter's been trying out for a basketball team. Today we find out if she makes it, and we're just biting our nails, and she really wants this, and they're making cuts at modified. I'm like, come on, don't make cuts. So this afternoon we're gonna support her either way, but we could see in her face she wants it. So you're watching your kids grow and and either become who they're going to be. And this is a big moment, we think, for her. And so it's not always about work. If you're on the beach in Rio and motherhoods and the families as they grow and all that, to our listeners, we hope that you listen to help grow your business and make yourself better. But I hope we've done a good job to show that there's a balance of that conversation in this podcast. And the reasons we do and work so hard is for a lot more than just the profit or the margins or the top lines or the people. It's really about the families and the memories that we can create around. So, and this is just I'm getting sappy during the holiday season. I think that's what's happening. I don't know why. But thank you all. And thank you, Jennifer, for coming on. And great to see you, Neil and Macy. I don't think you look that much tanner from this beach, do you? I don't see the tan in them.
I followed up 2 days at the beach with 5 days in the classroom. So,
it's appreciated.
Yes.
It goes right away. We're good. Well, everybody have a great week. And thanks again. Thank you to our listeners. Please share and help us spread this good word. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks.
Bye, guys.
Bye.